I'm Montse Alvarado tonight on EWTN News Nightly. Stop right there. A federal court halts the bulk of the Trump administration's tariffs. How the White House is responding. Legal battle. Harvard University is locked in a dispute with President Trump. We have reaction from lawmakers on Capitol Hill. Reaching out. How a faith-based group is helping the homeless communities around the Vatican. Plus, shoot for the stars. We talk about an exciting opportunity here at EWTN for aspiring filmmakers. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you for being with us on the feast day of Pope St. Paul VI. Our top story tonight, over the last 24 hours, quite a legal back and forth having to do with President Donald Trump's tariffs. Today, a federal appeals court allowed President Trump to continue collecting tariffs under an emergency powers law. But just yesterday, the U.S. Court of International Trade ruled Trump overstepped his authority when he imposed big taxes on dozens of countries. White House correspondent Owen Jensen reports.
Monse, the Trump administration ripped that earlier three-judge ruling as another example of judicial overreach. And today, Peter Navarro and Caroline Levitt both addressed reporters.
The tariffs remain in place. The court told us, they didn't all but tell us, they told us, go do it another way.
We will win this battle in court, and the president will implement his America First trade policies.
Earlier this year, President Trump slapped tariffs on almost all U.S. trading partners and also took aim at China, Mexico, and Canada. The administration is citing the illegal flow of immigrants and drugs across the U.S. border and long-standing trade deficits as national emergencies.
Our middle class has been hollowed out. Our manufacturing base has left and gone overseas. Jobs have been offshored. And now no court did anything about that.
My fellow Americans, this is Liberation Day.
In early April, President Trump imposed tariffs of up to 50% on countries with which the U.S. runs a trade deficit and 10% baseline tariffs on almost everybody else.
We're standing up for the American worker, and we are finally putting America first.
Fast forward to now, businesses, consumers, and the markets have more uncertainty about what comes next. The tariffs are being challenged in at least 7 lawsuits.
The Constitution gives the power to tariff to Congress, not to the president. So that means there's got to be some limit when Congress delegates that authority to the president.
We are not naive about rogue justices in the judiciary and Democrats filing lawsuits. This has got to stop, by the way. This weaponization of the judiciary to stop President Trump from doing what he promised the American people, this has got to stop.
Meanwhile, across the globe, China wants the U.S. to eliminate additional tariffs. It says there are no winners in a trade war.
The Trump administration says its rationale for imposing the tariffs was legally sound and argues the three judges usurped the president's authority. And for now, this legal battle will go on. At the White House, Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
Joining us for more is Michelle Schultz, founder of Schultz Trade Law, PLLC, and a trade counsel for major corporations. Michelle, thank you so much for being with us. Now, since the president announced the tariffs on April 2nd, we're going on 2 months here, the global market has seen a lot of turbulence. These rulings and a pause from the appeals court, what will this uncertainty and back and forth mean for the global market?
So ever since Inauguration Day, when the tariffs were first announced, our clients, companies, large, small, medium, have been panicking. They're asking very practical, everyday questions like, what should I count as my ship date? When did I ship the goods? Was it before or after the rules changed? And so we're watching this, and it's moving so quickly. And of course, today, we've seen a back and forth again. But for industry, this is devastating. A lot of my clients have been struggling. Some are at risk of going out of business, and they are trying desperately to navigate the tariff landscape, which changes by the hour.
Now, if global markets do eventually stabilize, will there be trust issues between the U.S. and our trading partners that will hurt some of your clients?
Yes, absolutely. We have clients who, for example, already moved out of China because there were Section 301 tariffs under a different set of regulations on China. They move to Mexico, and then they get hit with a different kind of tariff. So they've already adjusted, and the other countries are watching this, not sure whether to believe us or not believe us. Also, it's important to note that the other countries that we're dealing with are not technically the ones that are legally liable for paying the bill. It's the U.S. importer that pays the bill. So in many cases, we're working on contractual terms with a foreign party, and that foreign party has no idea what's going to happen next. So they're trying their best to protect themselves.
Now, the International Emergency Economic Powers Act, which is what President Trump used to invoke the tariffs, allows the president to invoke sanctions in times of emergency, but not tariffs. What's the difference between sanctions and tariffs?
Well, sanctions would be restrictions on trade that are country-specific or specific to a person, and they're generally administered by Treasury, the Office of Treasury. The tariffs are a completely different thing. They are revenue. And so the administration seems to be using the IEEPA, the International Emergency Economic Powers Act, as leverage to negotiate tariffs. However, this is a set of laws that came into effect in the 1970s, and it was aimed at things like wartime. It originated from the Trading with the Enemies Act, which was World War I. It was not intended to do deals. It was intended, according to the Court of International Trade, for actual emergencies.
Well, you're well connected in the world of international trade. What are your contacts saying about these rulings? Will they stick?
They're saying it's up in the air, because what's happened is the administration has, of course, asked for a stay of enforcement. The CIT ordered that the tariffs be immediately removed. However, the administration came in back to the CIT, Court of International Trade, asking for a stay. We were waiting for the Court of International Trade to decide whether or not to grant a stay to the administration by tomorrow at noon central. And in the meantime, the Trump administration went to the Circuit Court of Appeals on the Federal Circuit and obtained an emergency stay. So again, we're talking about emergency. We now have a stay, but the CIT stands firm in its position that this was unconstitutional and outside what's allowed by the Emergency Act. And so we will see how the CIT interacts with the appeals court. This appeals court stay is really an emergency measure. I don't see that as a long term.
We're going to be watching that for quite some time and possibly up to higher courts. Thank you so much, Michelle.
Thank you.
New developments tonight in the ongoing battle between Harvard University and the Trump administration. Now, all international students attending that Ivy League school are under scrutiny by the administration to identify any national security threats and other potential abuses. Capitol Hill correspondent Eric Rosales has reaction from lawmakers. Eric?
Good evening, Monse. This latest action began after the Department of Homeland Security tried to block Harvard from enrolling international students. A federal judge temporarily halted that move, which could affect more than 1 million international students. Now the State Department has paused all student visa applications amid its review of the vetting procedures. A Heritage Foundation education policy analyst says Harvard could have avoided this.
The Trump administration has asked for information on the disciplinary records of all students on foreign visas. Harvard has refused to provide that information, and it's because of that that the Trump administration has removed Harvard from eligibility for receiving foreign students in the fall.
The Trump administration has announced it's giving Harvard 30 days to contest those plans through a lengthier administrative process. Even with that, President Trump still favors limiting the number of foreign students at Harvard.
I think they should have a cap of maybe around 15%, not 31%. We have people who want to go to Harvard and other schools. They can't get in because we have foreign students there.
Experts say it's all to protect U.S. assets and property from being stolen and used overseas. They add Harvard and other universities need to enforce the rules.
The problem is the universities are failing to do that, refusing to do it as if they were sanctuary cities and don't want to comply because they think everyone should be let in and no one should be supervised.
Republicans agree. Catholic Congressman Riley Moore says the Chinese government requires its 300,000 students here in the U.S. to be intelligence gatherers.
They're following the law when they're here. Why do we have them here? We should not be allowing these students to study here in the United States and causing us national security problems back here at home where they're our biggest near-peer threat in the world.
But Democrats say President Trump and his administration is overstepping its bounds.
Harvard is standing up to this administration in its slide toward a surveillance state. The demands it is making are purely retaliatory, and they're a violation of the First Amendment.
Harvard University said that it will, quote, stand firm in its commitment to the good of the nation. Some experts believe that this is not going to end up in the courts, but will actually end up with an agreement between Harvard and the Trump administration. But just today, a federal judge said that she plans to issue a preliminary injunction blocking the Trump administration from revoking Harvard University's certification to host foreign students. At the Capitol, Eric Rosales, EWTN News Nightly.
Now to the Middle East, where Israel has authorized more Jewish settlements in the West Bank. The Israeli defense minister calls it a strategic move that prevents the establishment of a Palestinian state that would endanger Israel. This comes as scores were killed in overnight strikes on the Gaza Strip, and Palestinians rushed to collect aid as well as resources. Meanwhile, the U.S. flag was hoisted over the U.S. ambassador's residence in Syria for the first time in years as a sign of growing ties between Washington and the new Syrian government. The embassy was closed in 2012. China's defense ministry is criticizing President Trump's plan for a golden dome.
The U.S. blatantly presses ahead with the golden dome system and deploys space-based weapons. It continuously expands its military buildup and stalks an arms race in outer space. Such acts violate the relevant principles of outer space treaties, heightens the risk of turning outer space into a war zone, and triggers the space arms race.
Trump announced the $175 billion concept to put U.S. weapons in space for the first time to be fully operational by early 2029. Tens of thousands of protesters in Nepal are demanding the abolished monarchy be restored. The protesters waved flags and chanted, demanding the return of the king and the restoration of Hinduism as a state religion. Nepal abolished the monarchy and turned the nation into a republic back in 2008. Groups loyal to the monarchy accused political parties of corruption and failed governance. We have a lot more still to come on EWTN News Nightly, including Planting Your Faith. The Vatican completes the floral coat of arms for Pope Leo XIV. And blessed is he who considers the poor. Meet the men and women putting that psalm into practice around the Vatican. A new look at the Vatican Gardens as the floral coat of arms for Pope Leo XIV has been completed. As you can see, hundreds of colorful plants have created this masterpiece, with some being reused from the floral coat of arms for Pope Francis. The project took around 2 weeks, with gardeners working on a daily basis. Visitors will be able to get an incredible view of the work of art from the dome of St. Peter's Basilica. Pope Leo is giving a bonus to several thousand Vatican employees for their work during the conclave. The Holy Father says 5,000 workers will be given an extra 500 euros in their paychecks next month. The long-standing tradition is seen as a gesture of gratitude to security, cashiers, and those who work in the Vatican bookstore and clothing stores. The legacy of late Pope Francis includes his outreach to the homeless and disadvantaged, especially and around the Vatican. As Pope Leo begins his pontificate, Catholic groups remain committed to those who need food and shelter while living on the margins of society. EWTN Vatican journalist Valentina Di Donato has more.
The poor, the homeless, the voiceless. These were some of the most vulnerable people placed at the heart of Pope Francis's papacy. And the people he helped feel visible have not forgotten him.
I think he knew what it meant to be with the poor and not the rich. He knew what poverty, anger, and the streets meant.
Different aid organizations in Rome help keep the poorest and marginalized people of society visible, alive, and with dignity. We are with one of them, the Sant'Egidio nonprofit organization run by volunteers who every day after university prepare meals and go to the streets to reach out to the homeless. Paolo is one of these volunteers.
At the beginning, I had difficulty to approach those people because at first I was thinking as the society taught me. So, which was, those people are different. You are different from them. But the more I stayed with them, the more I realized that in reality, there are people just like me.
His time volunteering as someone who is studying peace building at university has helped his understanding of empathy, but also his own faith.
When I started the community, I was not much of a believer. I become a believer with the community.
We travel with the volunteers of Sant'Egidio to the central streets of Rome, near St. Mary Major, where Pope Francis is buried and where many of the people who live on the streets felt seen by the late Pope. Today, they look to the volunteers.
It's a jungle here, a jungle, and it's getting worse. The Caritas is who helps us. Thank God they feed us a hot plate of food, a warm drink. Faith in who? In God, I don't see him anymore. The sky has become dark. Once upon a time, yes.
We try to offer everything we have to help them open up to us and find a sort of oasis of peace in this inferno of the street.
Many of the homeless in Rome have met Pope Francis throughout the years as he hosted regular lunches and even sheltered the homeless at the Vatican. Alessandro was one of them.
I have always worn this. With Pope Francis, we always went and ate at the Vatican. With this Pope, I don't know. He might stop doing it. There are other groups, like the Order of Malta, which is Catholic, that brings us food and clothes. But we don't know how the new Pope will be.
Andrea Costa is the president and founder of the Baobab Experience, another non-profit organization that helps immigrants and the homeless, where both Catholics and non-Catholics volunteer.
You can find people who are very glad and proud now to cooperate with church. And I think that also our church has got even stronger being in the street with this kind of activists, with this kind of volunteers.
The start of a new papacy often means new emphases. The world's most forgotten now wait to know how they will be seen under the new pontificate. Alejandro, who says he lives on the streets by choice, tells us that in life we must keep the faith.
No tengas miedo. Hay dos palabras que en el.
You can't be fearful. These are words that in time were revealed to me. The humility to not fear, because prayer has power. And when someone believes and has faith, all is possible.
Y cuando uno cree y tiene fe, todo se da.
In Rome, Valentina Di Donato for EWTN News Nightly.
Up next on EWTN News Nightly, fight over the confessional. A new law requires priests to break the seal of confession in certain cases. But today, bishops are fighting back. Plus, calling all filmmakers, the exciting opportunity EWTN has for you. Bishops in Washington state are pushing back against a new law that would require them to break the seal of confession. The law goes into effect in July. It would require priests to report on the faithful if they suspect that the abuse of minors has taken place. The preliminary statement of the lawsuit says, in part, the Diocese of Washington have each adopted and implemented policies that go further in the protection of children than the current requirements of Washington law. The sole exception to this self-imposed reporting requirement based on more than 2,000 years of church doctrine is information learned by a priest only in the confessional and thus protected by the sacramental confessional seal. Earlier this month, the U.S. Department of Justice launched an investigation into the law. Calling all budding movie makers, EWTN has an exciting opportunity for you. It's called the Lux Student Film Contest.
Every filmmaker starts somewhere. No matter where you are in your journey, this is your chance to take the next step. The Lux Student Film Contest is calling high school, college, and film school students with a passion for storytelling. Films can be up to 2 minutes long. The winners will earn a short-form content development deal with EWTN Studios. Submit your film today. Visit EWTN.com/Lux for details. Your vision, your story, your moment.
For more, we turn to Len Marino, Vice President of Creative Services for EWTN. Len, it is great to be with you, especially to talk about this contest, Lux. How long has this been going on? What's the background for the Lux contest?
Well, Lux started in 2016 as Cool to be Catholic. And what we did, we said, you know, how can we get more content in from young people? Well, we should do a contest. So the contest was started for high school, college, and film school students. And I guess at the time, there was a great need for it because we had a great turnout. We had a lot of submissions that year. And back then, the prize was we fly them to Birmingham. They go on the family celebration. And, you know, their work is shown. And the work continues to be shown on EWTN, you know, throughout the year. Some of the stuff is still shown as interstitial.
Beautiful.
But let me give you the backstory on how we went from Cool to be Catholic to Lux.
Sure.
As we know, Lux is Latin for light. So we wanted to really make this, you know, about the light that is the Catholic Church. And we explored a couple of names. But now it's officially called the EWTN Studios Lux Student Film Contest. The winners in those three categories, high school, film school, college, will get the first prize for them is a short-form content deal with EWTN.
With EWTN Studios, right?
Studios, yes, yes. Thank you for that.
And be mentored by incredible professionals like yourself. When you think about this contest, it's these two-minute submissions, right? Mm-hmm. But you said that the key was really telling a good story. Is that how you win?
Yes. It really is. And I mean, but part of telling a good story, I mean, some people go and the story is so compelling, they don't need special effects. Some have a story that is compelling, but they feel like they need to add. Last year's winner in the film school category, their entire piece, his entire piece, was stop motion animation.
Ooh.
And I mean, and that was hard work, you know? And so it was a compelling story, but he used a lot of imagination to bring it to life.
Knowing that this is a year of Jubilee, what's your hope for Lux?
My hope for Lux is that we, number one, you know, Mother used to say, if you save one soul, if I save one soul with this network, I've done my job.
I can't wait to see what comes out of it. Thank you so much, Len.
No, thank you so much. God bless.
Finally tonight, a rare blessing for the faithful in Spain. Earlier this month, the body of St. Teresa of Avila was publicly exhibited for only the third time in four centuries. Pilgrims from all over the world flocked to a small town in Spain. Church officials say in the 2 weeks her body was publicly exhibited, around 93,000 people venerated her. Earlier this week, her remains were returned to the silver case and placed back in the Basilica of the Annunciation in the Castilian city where she died in the year 1582. We thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Montse Alvarado. Good night, and God bless you.